You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, Ruben Nielsen from Unknown Mortal Orchestra. How's it going?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. You're in town because the band's playing a show at the lovely Town Hall.
Yep.
Have you guys played there before?
Cody and I played there in the Mitchicks. We were supporting Shehad. That's the only other
powerful
time. Yeah, it was pretty. It was when we were. It was during the three-piece Mitchicks era at the end, and it was pretty fun. It was like, it was weird because it's such a cavernous room.
Yeah,
and we were in the probably the most. It was probably
hard,
the
fast
most.
And heavy.
Yeah, it was just kind of. Yeah, that was. It was a pretty raw like version of the band. So, it was a good show though, as I remember.
And
yeah.
And you've got Cody on the drums, right?
Yeah,
for this gig.
Mm-hmm.
That's rad.
Yeah, he's been with us all year. He's played most of the drums on all of the records anyway. So, we've had this kind of succession of really amazing drummers. But a lot of the time, it's telling someone who's like really amazing to try and play like Cody.
Yeah.
So that it's really weird not having to do that. He just like plays everything perfectly, and so
sweet.
That's been really amazing because it's sort of it I think it like the songs sound like the record now, so that's kind of a cool thing.
Rad. Like how does that work then? Do you kind of have a demo of the record with drums that you've kind of already put on, and then he just makes it radder, or how does that
sometimes I'll play like I play a little bit of drums on the recordings as well. Like there's at least one song on each album that has me playing drums, but I'm nowhere near as good as him. Cody's my favorite drummer.
Oh, he's like a weapon, ever. Man. His new stuff where he's just cruising with all that MIDI situation, it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, my brother is ridiculous.
He's a bit of a musical octopus. Eh?
Yeah. And so, but in terms of just the drums, particularly, it's like I couldn't think of another drummer I'd rather play with in the world or in musical history, to be honest. Like,
perfect.
It's I don't know why. I guess it's just because we just communicate really easily. Half the time we don't really need to explain things to each other, and I think he's just the funkiest dude out there, you know.
For anyone that hasn't heard Birthday Suit, definitely have a listen. It's kind of centered around the just epic drums, right?
Yeah. Well, so he's in his own music, it's sort of like it's almost like he's the lead drummer, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. That's really fun to listen to. But also in Yuma, he's also very good at laying down very simple groove, and it's just a joy to play with him now. So that's been really cool, and it's going to be really exciting to be home and play with him. Yeah.
Have you got a sort of a new ensemble of musicians that you're out on the road
great
with this
word,
time
great
around?
Word.
Yeah, ensemble. Well, Jake has always been in the band. He's the bass player. A lot of people have changed over the years. But we have Thomas, who's like a guy we've known for ages from Portland. We lost Quincy, who was our keyboard player for a long time. Jack White poached him.
For real?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And he, well, it was like.
They got to be good.
Yeah.
They can't be too good.
Well, it's like. Well, no, it was perfect because his wife just had a baby, and we are really, we tour as much as a band could possibly. So I think the thing was like he was, we could match what he was paying, but
right.
we couldn't match the idea of hardly going out on tour ever and him being able to be home with his
true.
Wife. And you were mentioning Atlanta, so he just moved to Atlanta and he can spend more time there. And so I think it was just perfect time for him, and the part of, you know, the space of life that he's in, he doesn't want to go out with us and tour for 9 months of the year and get drunk every day, and I don't think his wife wanted him to do that either. So.
How did that go down? Were you on the same bill as Jack White and he was just like, yep, that I like that one.
Well, Quincy's like very well known. It's not right. like he's played on a lot of different recordings, and you know, he's worked with John Legend and all these kind of people, so he's definitely like a known guy. But I think the thing was he did some sessions with Jack, and then At some point, I think he was thinking like, I think Jake was like, oh, I want to take this guy on tour, and he thought he could do both, and then I suppose they were just like, no, you can't do both, you have to choose. And then he was of two minds, and then I think once he started talking to us, we were just like, go,
do the thing.
So
cool,
you know,
man. That's cool.
We you know, we're happy for him, and everything worked out great.
Now 9 months of the road, 9 months of the year out on the road. Do you sort of have favorite festivals or places to play?
You know, there's certain places that we really like Portugal. You know, for some reason it's just so fun. I think most musicians that go there have a similar thing. The crowd's just really cool. I really love Mexico. We've been like really embraced there. And then there's like certain places in the States. Like, I really like touring the South.
Who dances the best?
Yeah. Oh man. Canadians are pretty outrageous.
They've got good vibes, Canadians.
Yeah,
actually,
the Canada is always fun. And but yeah, like places like Portugal and Spain. But you know, the north of England, I really love playing.
Far out.
Irish, you know, Dublin is like really fun. I don't know. There's a lot of everywhere's got like a different
way to party,
different vibe. Yeah.
Yeah, cool, isn't it?
No, we off air. We were just chatting about life in Portland, Oregon, for you. It seems like there's a lot of really great music coming out of there at the moment, and a lot of the stuff that I like is sort of in the psychedelic vein. Would you say that we're sort of in the midst of some sort of psychedelic renaissance at the moment?
I don't know about that, because it's sort of I think in a way there's a bunch of bands out there, you know, obviously Tame Impala's kind of like become out of control how big, you know, they are, and that's like, I think that really has started to like have an impact on the mainstream for a couple of years. And then there's King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, who also really blew up. And then I think we've been really lucky. And then I think the combination of these bands, who I've known for ages, and it's very surreal, like watching them get really successful, because I don't think I really would have thought that would happen. And I think that our success is overshot what we were aiming for. So and I don't know how those guys feel about it, but I feel that way too. And then you have like I would also put Thundercat, you know, in that kind of basket in a way, because it's another example of someone that I always thought was really good, but I would have never thought would be as successful as...
It's quite complicated stuff, and it's not flying over people's heads these days, is it? People are actually absorbing, like, your Kamasi Washingtons and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they're really loving that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and that whole scene, I really feel like those are people that we've... You know, those are our peers, I suppose. And so, like, I really have felt like a part of a scene, but I don't know what it's like from the outside or how big this thing will get or what but you know, it's like the I know for a fact that all of those famous I know the famous people are listening to us and watch and referencing us in the studio and stuff like that. And I get trap artists and stuff like that are paying attention to what we're doing, so I suppose it's like something's going on, but I don't know what. You know, it's like, I don't know what it's like to look at it from the outside.
Hey, someone's just texted in. They want to know where they should party in Mexico. Anybody know the answer to that?
In Mexico City? Well, Tulum's quite nice. Guadalajara and Mexico City are good. I've never been to Tijuana, but I've heard that that's kind of like a more the CD.
That sounds like the OG spot.
Yeah, I think that's that, but that's not really my I've never been there, so
not into risking
but it. I love Mexico City, and we're going to Guadalajara soon, and Tulum I've been to as well, and I love that place. It's beautiful.
Nice.
Now you've been on Jaguar for quite a
great label
quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like working with that label and some of the bands that are... Do you see much of the other bands that are on the label?
So they have like a staff party?
Yeah, no, they are actually... There's like almost a culture of like a family kind of vibe. The reason that I... One of the reasons that I signed to that label in the first place is they flew us to Bloomington, Indiana, where the label was originally based. And they just kind of... just flew us there to just party and hang out with them for like 3 days.
Catch the vibe.
And so they were really fun to hang out with, and I met everybody and they were very friendly. And then I thought, like, well, that's a kind of good sign that they would introduce us to everyone. And you know, I think that's their strength, was they wanted to show us that how well everybody gels together and stuff like that. So that's been really cool. But it's a similar thing where, you know people from a certain time, and then that label's gotten even, you know, so much bigger since then. Yeah. So it's all a bit crazy to me. I'm never quite prepared for success, you know. Yeah. Like looking at people and going like, wow, you're really successful now. But yeah, so they're a good label, and they basically although, you know, they have all the resources I could possibly ask for, but when I make records, they just leave me alone. And then and then I just hand the record in finished, and they go, cool,
well because that's what you sort of did in the first place, right? So they're like, why get in the way of this situation, right?
Yeah, I don't know if that's everyone's experience with them. Mm. But I think it's they definitely have a if it ain't broke don't fix it kind of approach to working with me, which is good. I appreciate that, having, you know, been in the in a songwriter for a while, and you know, I think I know what I can do. Mm. You know, but yeah, I like the label a lot. I actually was just thinking I would sign, when I extend my contract, I'll just sign back with them. That's kind of my main my plan, I suppose, because I feel,
if it ain't broke,
yeah, same way, you know, just like I like the way things are going, and I like the fact that they leave me alone to do my thing. And yeah, it's been good.
So the first three records you put out were all sort of done at home, correct? Is that...
Yeah, yeah.
And but with Sex and Food, was it a different process?
It was kind of the same in the sense that, like, I mixed the record at home, and I still recorded certain aspects of it at home, but I kind of gave myself roughly 2 years to do the record, and I knew I was going to do a lot of it myself. And I think I just the idea of being in my basement for 2 years would just sounded like a little bit too much.
A bit grim.
Yeah, and I sort of have, you know, like when I did the third album, Multi-Love, I was, you know, they would give me, the record label gave me a budget, and then I kind of, being sort of DIY minded, I just didn't use it. I like bought a couple of pieces of gear and then just kind of got on with doing it the way that I would have done it if I had no money.
Maybe
and
bought then, like a nicer sandwich for lunch or something.
Yeah. I'd get, rather than buy Dr. Pepper, I might get like the organic like version. But then like so
how to make your music organic.
Yeah, and then I kind of but on this one, I kind of realized, you know, when I went through the budget and stuff, I thought, you know, if you go to, because I've always thought like, recording studio is so expensive. And then I thought, well, if I go to, you know, New York and work in a recording studio, and I'll spend my whole budget on studio time. But if I go to Hanoi in Vietnam and I get to go into the studio then it'll cost like half the money to do something that'll probably inspire me way more. So I, you know, I kind of did that instead, you know, travel to a different place, you know, rent a studio that maybe doesn't get the chance to get, you know, just like we'll be grateful for the business, you know, rather than go to like Electric Lady or something somewhere famous. And I think that suits me more anyway. Like I don't know if I would work that well in like a really famous studio with people going like,
everything, you know, at your disposal
is made here, you know, that kind of thing. That's not very inspiring to me. I love the feeling of being like somewhere slightly uncomfortable or like gnarly, which, like, you know, Vietnam is like very, very, the weather's like crazy and you know, walking to the studio and back every day in this like kind of monsoon heat was, for some reason, that's inspiring to me. Or like being in Mexico City, I think I make better music under those conditions. Yeah. And at the end of the day, it's like you end up spending the same amount of money on, or less on, you know, a situation that's more inspiring, I guess.
Yeah.
Hey, this Saturday, obviously at the Town Hall, what's in store? Are you playing a lot off the new record? And then obviously the hits, is that, that's basically how it goes down with these tours?
Yeah, I suppose so. We do play some obscure stuff as well. We sort of put together the set list in the days leading up to the show, right. And I think we're gonna do something a little bit different for, because it's a hometown show, and I think we'll have some friends and family get up and help out and maybe play some songs that we wouldn't ever play anywhere else. And
cool.
Yeah, but we play a lot of new stuff, and it's a fun time. I think it's more of a party than ever, the show. I think every album the band has gotten more fun live. I think some people think that the band might be quite sort of mellow and sad, because I think the recordings can be quite reflective and introverted or something, but
there's a shitload of funk in there though,
so. Yeah, it's more of a party actually. You know, like we do play you know, like a song like So Good at Being in Trouble, which people like, you know, we'll play that, but the version of it that we play is more you know, it doesn't feel like really down, it feels
right
up. Yeah.
Mint.
Yeah.
Gonna jam one off the record?
Yeah, I was gonna go with Major League Chemicals.
Okay.
I quite like it. It's a slippery little jam. Is that right?
Yeah, no, I like that one. Speaking of Cody's drumming, this song has a really good recording of Cody playing drums, and it's all one take. It was all one live take.
Oh, actually.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. 1, 2, 3.
The 1200s are turned on, kind of.
There's like a...
But you guys, Town Hall this Saturday, the 8th of September.
Mm-hmm.
A Known Mort Orchestra.
Cheers.
There it is. There. That's
right.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
Hey, BFM.
Is that the right one?
No.
No, it's not.
No.
There's a little thing up.
Well, no, you know what it is? Is the first track intro, goes seamlessly into the second one. Okay. So you may as well play the first and second song. Because the first song is just the intro to the second song.
Wait, is this it, right? No?
No.
What the fuck's happening with my life?
That sounds great though.
Yeah, this is the one that I wanted to play.
Oh, okay, this is Honeybee.
Okay, sorry.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.